You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The D.C. Statehood Green Party, a member of the Shirts Off Coalition, declares that Bush is taking the shirts off our backs for a war on Iraq. To oppose this and challenge Bush's State of the Union address, the Shirts Off Coalition called yesterday for a rally, a concert, and a march. They invited Minneapolis City Councilwoman Natalie Johnson Lee from the Green Party to reply to Bush's address. Reem Kathuda, Peace Watch producer for WPFW, Pacifica Station in Washington, was there and files this report.
From Minneapolis, woo! So tonight I'm going to give you the real State of the Union address.
At 10 p.m. last night, with the Capitol and a huge screen of multimedia satiric commentary on Bush in the background, Minneapolis City Councilwoman Natalie Johnson Lee replied to Bush's State of the Union. Addressing more than 2,000 people on the Mall west of Washington, D.C.'s Capitol in the freezing cold, the councilwoman highlighted her Green Party's opposition to the war on Iraq and Bush's domestic war on civil liberties in light of the economic domestic priorities.
Tonight, America is in the midst of being threatened from many different directions, but not from the directions that some would have us believe. Our greatest threat is not Iraq, it's not Iran or North Korea. Our greatest threat lies in the sense of hope eroding, our environment scorched, our economy toppling, our seniors starving, our children not cared for, and our collective talents remaining untapped. This evening, the Green Party, America's only growing political party, offers alternatives to the many challenges of our day. Alternatives of hope. Alternatives of peace. Alternatives of action. The Republicans and the Democrats' tired message of yesterday must be replaced with the Green Party's reinvigorating message of today. For tomorrow is at stake. I represent approximately 30,000 people in the city of Minneapolis. Too many go hungry at night. Too many are homeless. Too many want work and cannot find a job. Tonight, George Bush said the State of the Union is strong. I beg to differ. The State of the Union is lonely in the neighborhood of nations. Tonight, here in Washington, D.C., on behalf of the citizens across the nation, I ask, who called President Bush and asked him for this war? Did you call him? Who called Congress and asked for this war? I know the American people did not dial those numbers. Someone else did. Someone from the oil companies. Someone from the weapons manufacturer. Someone named Daddy from his own family. I've got a message for the CEOs of the oil companies and the weapon manufacturers. You're tying up the telephone line. America is trying to get through. Like 169 other Green Party state representatives, mayors, county supervisors, city council members, park board, commissioners, school board members, my telephone is ringing off the hook. For over a year now, the American people have felt unsafe in expressing themselves for fear of retaliation. We must get off the big brother kick and onto the big ideas kick. Americans should feel safe in expressing their outrage, anger, fear about the impending war, about big oil, family rivalries, and fat cat industries. The Green Party wants you to know we are not scared. We shall not run from the most important fight, but instead stand strong in the face of what more and more can be described as an era of irresponsible American imperialism. Only 50% of the population votes in any given presidential election in America. Some have called this the era of voter apathy. I would submit this is a time of uninspired citizenry. I call on each of you to open up your kitchens, your living rooms, your offices, your places of worship, and begin discussing what is happening before our very eyes. Let's take back our democracy. We must understand that it is not the immigrants in America that are our enemy. Our enemy is hate. Hatred and fear of those who do not look, act, or behave like us. I am proud to be part of a movement that guarantees the rights of all Americans. We are the Greens, the party of the red, the yellow, the brown, the black, and the white. I call upon the Bush administration to keep their oil-stained fingers off the pristine Anwar area in Alaska by calling for no drilling in Anwar. must find new and sustainable energy sources in America. We have the technology know-how and the renewable resources to make or break our dependence on fossil fuels. America will always be at war as long as oil is our main source of energy. It's time to kick the oil addiction. Ecological wisdom must prevail. Common sense dictates that we will not begin to treat global environment better until we begin to treat our global neighbors better. Until America is as hell-bent on making peace as it is on making war, we shall be paralyzed. We must put a stop on the global trade of weapons. We must start right here at home. U.S.-based corporations are the prime suppliers of weapons of the world, and European corporations are not far behind. It's time to beat swords into plowshares. It's time to put the armed profiteers out of business. The foreign policy of supporting our dictators against their dictators has been a failure. It's why Saddam Hussein is in power today. Thank you, Secretary Rumsfeld. Until each person in America has their own dream, Dr. King's hope will remain dashed. The Green Party believes that the spirit of nonviolence in this nation must spread from policies dealing with Iraq to our policies stemming the tide of police brutality on our streets. The spirit of nonviolence must exist to quelling the rise of domestic violence and economic violence at home and abroad. Tonight here at home, President Bush asked American public to embrace the 21st century version of the trickle-down economics by supporting his tax cut for the rich. The people of this country are struggling to find affordable housing. They're struggling to pay their school. They're struggling to secure and keep a job. As a friend of mine said the other day, it's not that most people don't have enough money at the end of the month. Most people have too much month at the end of their money. In regular American households, homeland security means job security. Unrestricted corporate power has caused massive unemployment across Asia, Africa, and Latin America, and today threatens the United States as well. It is a place we need a global economic policy which primary goal is the elimination of poverty and the creation of sustainable industries. The healing of America must begin. Our democracy is at stake. The soul of our country is at stake. We must reclaim our mantle of moral leadership around the world and at home by embracing the Green Party agenda of ecological wisdoms, nonviolence, and social economic justice and grassroots democracy. To those Americans who are looking for a way out and a way up, the Green Party says, we are here. We are growing. We are a hopeful alternative. We are the Green Party. We are on a new mission and a new vigor, and we mean business. Wow!
Minneapolis City Councilwoman Natalie Johnson Lee highlighting a Green Party sorry State of the Union address in front of the Capitol. Thanks to Eddie Becker, Alan Bushnell and David Russo from the IMCDC, and Radha Mitchell and Ingrid Drake from WBIX.org, Refugees and Exiles Radio, for help on this segment. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, reporting from WPFW in Washington, D.C., I'm Reem Katkhuda.
The State of the Union address yesterday was met with little skepticism or critique from the mainstream press. That's according to Rachel Cohen, a media analyst with Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, a media watchdog organization. Pacifica's Peace Watch spoke with her this afternoon about the myopic vision of corporate media, its role in shifting public opinion toward the side of power, the language of wartime, and her reactions to President Bush's speech last night.
Well, I think a lot of the problem has to do with journalists not double-checking the president himself on his accuracy. You know, the overall approach to a lot of the State of the Union coverage, as usual, was from a sort of a PR perspective. You know, how did the president do it conveying his message? Did he look strong? Did he look confident? Very little emphasis on the substance of his remarks.
So what's the verdict at this point, as per the mainstream media? Was he strong? Was he convincing?
Most of the media reports that I've seen have talked a lot about him being bold and assertive. You know, they do note caveats that, of course, the Democrats will oppose his plans, etc. But again, it's sort of almost horse race coverage rather than anything dealing with, well, how did his comments relate to the real world? A couple of things I was startled by. One was his remarks about tax cuts. Bush asserted that 92 million Americans this year will keep an average of almost $1,100 more of their own money. Now, that's a profoundly misleading statistic. the folks at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities have pointed out that, you know, the key word is average. Basically, the White House got this average number by including very rich people who are getting very big tax cuts. Really, most people are getting like a tenth of that. Now, journalists need to be unpacking statistics and numbers like that for the public to make them meaningful rather than just repeating them.
And you're not seeing that happen?
Not so much. You know, sometimes you'll see things on the inside pages of news.
I mean, is that just sort of an isolated case, the misinformation about the tax cuts, or?
Yeah, there's many. You can kind of go down the list for each section of his speech. Another one I was particularly struck by, given the push for war right now, is that the president actually repeated his contention that Iraq has been gathering high-strength aluminum tubes that are suitable for nuclear weapons production. Now, the media in the past has actually picked up this story and reported that, in fact, the International Atomic Energy Agency has directly contradicted this claim. They say these tubes are probably not useful for nuclear weapons production. This claim is key because it's the centerpiece of Bush's supposed evidence that Iraq is pushing for nuclear weapons and therefore we need to go to war. But I was startled to see today that most papers didn't make, you know, the replication of this debunked claim a central part of their coverage.
Did your research yield that there was perhaps more balance?
Well, we haven't finished counting up the numbers yet, but my observations so far, that it was a bit skewed towards Republicans or, in terms of pundits who don't necessarily profess a party, towards a more conservative or centrist bent. As usual, really progressive critics, not necessarily Congress or senators, because there aren't that many very progressive people there, but, you know, even analysts from outside government were underrepresented, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I heard one reporter this morning on Good Morning America. He actually referred to the officials around Saddam Hussein as Saddam and the gang around him. And I couldn't believe he had actually said that. Is that really sort of a great departure from journalistic integrity and credibility to refer to someone in that manner, the president of another nation, even though he may be an undesirable president of another nation?
Yeah, and that does strike me as inappropriate and unfortunately not as a great departure from the way a lot of our mainstream media discuss Iraq. There's a lot of use of, you know, we to say, well, we are doing this in relation to Iraq, you know, not separating yourself from the U.S. government. And referring to them as them or, you know, our enemies, that kind of talk. I think it would be good for journalists and pundits alike to be more careful about their use of language and, you know, what they're implying with it.
Do you have information, Rachel Cohen with FAIR, about whether Americans are buying the president's line, the White House's version of the facts?
On the one hand, we've seen polls that show us that many Americans are extremely confused about the facts. There's one poll showing that a lot of people believe that Iraq was either responsible for or connected to the World Trade Center attacks. And I think we can, in a sense, point the finger at some uncritical media coverage for leaving them with that impression. But on the other hand, polls also show that Bush's popularity is declining, and that people are persistently saying that, you know, they wish that if there's a war, that it would be done with international support and through the UN, et cetera. There's a bit of questioning going on, but also misinformation out there still. This comes up in coverage of the administration consistently, not just with State of the Union addresses, that journalists seem to have the idea that it would be somehow partisan or inappropriate for them to point out when an official says something that's not true. We think the opposite. You know, it's not partisan or too political. Journalists should exactly be saying, you know, pointing out the facts. That's their job. And we wish we saw more of it.
Is President Bush given a lot more leniency and leeway than previous presidents?
I think in some cases he is, yes, in particular in relation to the corporate scandals that touched him personally. If you consider, compared to Clinton, the coverage of, you know, sex scandals, which weren't even policy issues, you know, if those business scandals had been tied to Clinton, I think you would have seen much more persistent coverage of them.
And yet, the mainstream media is characterized as liberal.
Mainstream media reporters and editors tend to be somewhat liberal on certain social issues, but in terms of economic and foreign policy issues. It's just not true that they're liberal. And even beyond their personal political preferences, there are structural problems in terms of corporate ownership and media that tend to skew it towards a pro-business centrist perspective.
For example?
Well, most of our media is owned by just a few big companies. That does impact news coverage. You know, when news is produced mainly for profit instead of something in the public service, there's not a lot of incentive to rock the boat, to do in-depth investigative reporting, to really shake up, ask tough questions of the people in power, which is what we need our media to be doing. And I think in a lot of cases in the mainstream, we're not getting it. Ben Bagdikian's a great media scholar. I believe in the last edition of his book, The Media Monopoly, said it was down to about six corporations controlling most of U.S. media. And estimates I've seen range from about 6 to 10 corporations.
Rachel Cohen of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. Comcast Television, the nation's largest cable company, refused to air an ad the anti-war group Peace Action planned to run during President Bush's State of the Union address last night. Comcast's legal department notified the group on Tuesday morning that they would not run the ad. In a statement issued by the company, Comcast spokesperson Mitchell Schmal said claims made in the ad were unsubstantiated, though he failed to specify which claims the company objected to. The voices heard on the video produced by the group are those of actual people. Each gives his or her main reason for opposing war in Iraq.
This war against Iraq is the most irrational thing that
Iraq.
I can imagine.
It's a violation of international law.
I'm against a war because I don't
Why?
Believe it. It's the solution.
Where's the proof?
I'm not willing to risk my life for
Because
oil.
It will destabilize the whole region.
The president
in Iraq
thinks that a war can make us
in the
safer.
Best interests of the United States.
Self-appointed group
George
of mercenaries
Bush is pursuing a personal agenda.
I don't
agenda
believe in violence for resolving
that
our conflict.
I think that we've got enough problems here to focus
purely
on.
Purely for a partisan political
is speaking harshly.
It's an unjust war, an uncalled for.
We could use those billions of dollars here at home for our children.
We're going to Iraq. We will not be fighting each
other. Violence
war.
Only brings about more
There is
violence.
No them. There's only
us. Of everything my country has
it
stood
would be
for.
An unjust war.
The preemptive war has already
I'm
begun
here because
in
I'm
Iraq. We
very
know that
much
in
against
the spirit that
war.
Takes away the occasion.
It's important for us war. To listen
no,
quietly.
No real purpose.
There is
no.
Never an excuse for preemptive war.
Wrong war, wrong time.
I don't think anything
democracy.
Justifies going
war
in
Iraq
and blasting
because they
away
think it's immoral.
Billions.
It will it's backfire.
Will be a catalyst to an unknown number of acts
it's
of aggression.
It's going to destabilize many other countries in this
I don't
region.
Believe in war as a solution to
it
conflict.
It is important to know that the rest of the world is against this war.
We shouldn't kill people, especially
and turning the
innocent
Iraq
people.
Situation to a
the
media
Bush
circus.
The administration's attempts to link Al-Qaeda in Iraq have failed totally.
None of the reasons I've heard
to see them
have been good ones.
I'll be able to grow up in a peaceful world.
As a Marine Corps combat veteran of World War II, I oppose
the money
the war
that we are spending
fervently.
On waging
what
war
I
could
know
be better
is
used.
How much is the occupation going to cost?
Useless,
and how
purposeless
long
destruction of people.
An attack on Iraq won't make me.
Waging a war against Iraq will do nothing to end to
I don't
the
see
conditions
how this benefits the world at large.
I'm
at all.
Ashamed at the hypocrisy my country
Legal
expresses
in Iraq,
in causing war and
hypocritical
instead of
for
fanning
our country,
the flames
America
of our fear. Why doesn't
we have
our
other
government
priorities. Get your head in the game.
Current administration has given any clear
makes a mockery out of our democracy by
there is no way to peace. Peace is
Why can't
the
we just wait and let the inspectors complete their
I'm here because I'm frightened for our future.
For this war.
And, we have
and I can't find any justification for
was
it, whatever.
So that they wouldn't have American
I'm
bombs.
I'm very against this war. I was against the Vietnam War, and I'm much.
You know, what will we get out of that? What will How will we benefit?
As a Christian, I have always had a problem with
the idea
that there is something called the Jatta
warmonger. Who supports more of a personal agenda than a national agenda.
We're making more enemies than we're making
we
friends.
We go to war to save the president's face.
What is our justification for killing
I
civilians?
Think the most dangerous weapon of mass destruction
I feel like a lot of my
hatred.
Friends are going to die then.
I'm here as part of a chorus simply to say
no,
no
war,
yes
peace.
No,
no
war,
war,
yes
peace.
No,
no
war,
yes
peace.
Earlier today, Gloria Minot of Pacifica Station WPFW spoke with Scott Lynch, a spokesperson for Peace Action, about his reaction to Comcast's decision to censor the views of those opposed to war in Iraq.
they said that some of the claims of the folks who were on in the commercial were unsubstantiated. Now, the problem is, from my point of view, is that Comcast almost certainly carried the President's State of the Union address last night, which was full of unsubstantiated claims, and that didn't seem to bother them. The other part of this is that this huge corporation doesn't have any problems with broadcasting unsubstantiated claims by other companies doing advertising each and every day. Anybody can turn on the TV and find some unsubstantiated claim being made by some commercial. And it's just ridiculous that they're allowed to differentiate between commercial speech and political speech. They're essentially quashing our right, every American's right, because they control virtually, you know, 80% of the cable markets in America, or something ridiculous like that, to address probably the most daunting question of the last generation, and that's whether we should have a unilateral attack on another country and whether this is a good way to make our country safer.
Scott Lynch, a spokesperson for Peace Action of New Jersey, thanks to Tom Gomez from WBIX Internet Radio for preparing that report. The chorus of voices for peace continued to grow in the U.S. and around the world. A coalition of peace activists under the leadership of the Agape International Spiritual Center in Culver City, California, has developed a unique platform for increasing the peace. Dr. Michael Beckwith, founder and spiritual director of the Multicultural Transdenominational Center, visited our studios recently and announced this year's Season of Peace.
With regard to this war and with regard to war period, it's time to make war obsolete. He's spending a tremendous amount of money building up war implements, continuing the same thing, same way that the nation has gone for many years. And it's time now to shift the emphasis from dominating, manipulating, controlling the imperialistic movement and begin to focus on how we can create a lasting peace on this planet. The way to do that is to eliminate the condition for terrorism. That means that if the people in the world have something to eat, something to drink, if they're literate, if they have a roof over their head, then the condition for the hate of our country begins to diminish. So America basically has to push the reset button on history and begin to go in another direction. And if I could speak to Bush, I would say he's in a prime position to shift that whole emphasis. Of course, I don't think he will. It's time for another kind of conversation. It's way beyond time for another kind of conversation.
You, Dr. Michael Beckwith, have been doing a great deal of work with the Agape International Center in San Francisco area?
It's in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles. And through your work with the Association for Global New Thought, you have a number of task force that have been spread out nationwide. These are based on principles of Gandhi and Dr. Martin Luther King. Tell us a bit more about what the teachings are.
Approximately 5 years ago, Arun Gandhi, the grandson of Mohandas K. Gandhi, came to us and wanted to basically commemorate the assassination date of his grandfather, which was January 30th, and begin to really emphasize these nonviolent social active principles. It happened to be the 30th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination as well. We put together what is now called the Gandhi King Season for Nonviolence. And for 64 days between January 30th and April 4th, we seek to really lift the consciousness of these nonviolent principles to be used in our world. And so there are task force now, hundreds of them in different cities around the nation, that for 64 days we go into the school systems, we have teach-ins, we have prayer vigils that bring to light their teachings and showing how relevant they are today in terms of practicing these principles to transform our society. We're talking about this war with Iraq, and there is no meaningful dialogue going on. There's no work to bring a lasting peace in our culture. First strike has entered into our lexicon, and in the season for nonviolence, what we're seeking to do always is to embrace the so-called enemy, to have a dialogue so that we're winning hearts to begin to walk in the same direction. And when we look at our policies here in America, they're the antithesis of those principles.
Indeed they are, and it would take a great deal of work and just rethinking and reestablishing just the very core of how this society functions, would it not, to get this country on that path, the path that you're promoting?
Absolutely. Dr. King called that a revolution of values. And we're in the same situation we were in when he was alive, where we're living in what I call a high-tech, low-touch society. And there's not a large conversation, except underground, and that seems to be rising, about building a kind, just society for all. We've become so overrun with consumerism and purchasing and buying things. This kind of conversation that creates lasting peace must begin to surface. January 30th, mm-hmm. in many locations, there will be a kickoff to this particular mm-hmm. season. Mm-hmm. At the United Nations, some of my colleagues will be speaking there. All around the country, there will be a rising up about these principles. Today, we have to continue to educate our society so that when we read the newspaper and we see that tremendous millions of dollars are being spent on creating the next new war implement, that we already have more than enough nuclear armaments, war bombs, etc., to destroy the world 20 times over. So at this time, we need to begin to divert not only our attention but our cash towards another vision. Unless an individual can begin to articulate another vision, you're not going to put your money in that direction. So you have a George Bush and family heading the people down a road of war, annihilation again, and people are starving in our country.
Mm-hmm. And whenever I read the opposition, those that support going to war with Iraq, they have pretty much embraced the idea that Saddam Hussein poses a threat to our society and our way of life, and then they cite the September 11th terrorist attack as an example of how we need to really fight back against this terrorism, and Saddam Hussein is lumped into that right. whole concept there. They say, you people that are you promoting peace, I mean, you're naive, and you know, one day you're going to wake up and realize we were right. War is not an option. What is the option? How do we deal with these type of people that pose threats to us? What's your response to that?
Well, first of all, our own intelligence, CIA, has concluded that Saddam Hussein is not a threat. These are our own reports from our own governmental agencies that have said, one, he's not a threat, he has no nuclear capabilities, and two, he had nothing to do with the September 11th event. If you remember, a few months ago, it was all about Osama bin Laden. And now that has gone to the back of the newspaper, and Bush is pushing this war against Hussein. So those events aren't even, it's not even relevant. It's just like smoke screen that's in the newspaper tying him to September 11th and talking about nuclear capabilities. He has none.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no response other than to state the facts.
But so when you say war is not an option, that sounds like a general across the board in every situation, war is not an option. Is this a pacifist organization?
Well, it's an organization that wants to build, that wants to articulate a vision for what Dr. King called the beloved community.
Mm-hmm.
So that means this. America is supposed to be the richest country in the world in terms of what the gross national product, etc. Yet we're number 22 in industrialized world in terms of supporting and eliminating world hunger. We're number 20, we're almost last in terms of eliminating literacy. We're almost last in terms of doing the humanitarian things for the rest of the world. Our emphasis have been to control other people's resources so that we can continue our way of life. So what we have to do is begin to shift our emphasis from domination, manipulation, and control to using the wealth, leveraging our wealth to assist the world in its unfoldment.
Dr. Michael Beckwith, founder and director of the Agape International Spiritual Center in Culver City, California. His latest release, In the Land of I Am. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Shalajan, Chris Harlan, and Sam Silsby. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.